This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on the Escape Hour with Russ, Ted and Fiona.
We do have a guest, yes. And I think what we're going to be talking about today is many, many, many things, but above those things, a drink that came to us from the UK, where our guest is from. Actually, I might be just pulling that out of my hat, but it certainly was made famous. And that, of course, is gin, one of the most popular drinks, having the massive renaissance. And in fact, that's old news right now because it's huge.
Yep.
But the amazing thing is that people keep making all these incredible gins, and Australian gins are now top of the pops, so to speak.
Yep.
So we have Ashley Palmer-Watts with us, who is the chef director of Dinner by Heston, that incredible restaurant by Heston Blumenthal down in Crown.
Yeah.
Wow.
Special. I don't know if anyone's ever made it there, but
it's super
delicious. Ash, welcome to the show.
Morning.
Lovely to have you here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for so many reasons, but drinking gin and tonic on a sunny Melbourne afternoon, I mean, there's got to be nothing better.
Well, I think it was meant to be after that sort of opening kind of story. I mean, you know, it's to lift the spirits, I suppose.
Lift the spirits.
And that's what gin's for, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It'd cool you off in the summer.
Didn't the Queen Mum always have a gin every afternoon?
Well, if I was the Queen Mum, I'd be having
gin.
Wasn't that her desired cocktail?
I think she had a few.
She always looked a bit slosh, the old granny, didn't she?
She knew
how to have a good time.
And I should also point out we have Tom Allen in the studio with us, who is the G&T man and carrier of the Esky. Hi, Tom.
Hello, good afternoon.
Thanks for coming in, guys.
It's okay.
So we're like, it's like, where do we start here? Because obviously you're part of the Dinner by Heston team. You run the show over there. The venue itself has been in Melbourne for, is it 3 years?
Two years now.
After, of course, the Fat Duck incredible scenario where people had to bid for tickets and it cost an arm and a leg to go. I didn't go, but I did go to Dinner by Heston. It's great. Amazing.
Fat Duck. It was great. Oh,
you went to the Fat Duck?
I did, yeah.
When it was in Melbourne?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah.
It's my experience.
Well, we started building dinner and we started designing it, and it's quite a big restaurant. And then the idea came to move the Fat Duck over and put it inside what would become the dinner dining room.
Right.
Make it completely different. So it had 6.5 months here and caused quite a stir.
Caused a stir. I mean, you know, in a food-obsessed town like Melbourne, I mean, it's really crazy. And that's why it's so wonderful that you decided to plonk down in our town, because everyone loves food.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Isn't it? It's a great city for food, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely. And there's so many things that just keep changing, and that's one of the other challenges, of course, because when you own a venue in Melbourne, or you have a venue, you have to keep things fresh and keep things moving and keep finding reasons to get your diners back in. And that is one of the things that you're going to be talking about today, is some of the delicious new produce and dishes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've got something for you to try a little bit later on as well, so we can kind of a virtual kind of a talk about change.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, of course, there's another component. We're talking about travel through the UK.
Yeah, brilliant.
Now, Ash, where are you from in the UK?
Well, I'm from Dorset in the south, but now I live sort of 30 miles west of London, near Bray, and travel into London to the restaurant.
And Bray, that is where the Fat Duck is.
Bray is where the Fat Duck is, and we've got a couple of pubs there as well.
I'd had a totally confusing conversation with someone when they were like, it's at Bray, and I'm like, no, Bray is in Birragara.
Yeah, that really is in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, it's a beautiful spot. But
it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, how long are you in Australia for? Yeah.
We're here until... it's Saturday, isn't it? We're here until Wednesday, and then we go to Margaret River for 5 days, and then we're back on Monday, and then we fly home to the UK on Friday. So,
how much time do you spend in Australia during the year?
Well, this is my 36th visit to Australia, believe it or not, in the last sort of... I came about 10 years ago, and then the rest have been in the last 4 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, I come over about between 7 and 9 times a year.
Right.
Yeah. That good. Is a damn load of travelling. You must have serious frequent flyer points.
Yeah, I do have a few.
That's
but,
good.
Are you up? Are you an up the front person or a down the back person?
In the middle.
In the middle.
I would say, yeah, and then you know where you can spend your points and get up the front.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Isn't it but, nice up the front?
It is nice.
It is nice.
It's lovely. It's the way forward, I think. Yeah. But you know, we can't always.
But it doesn't change the jet lag component we were talking before, does it? Doesn't matter.
No, it makes no difference whatsoever.
They do serve nice gin up the front. You've got to give them that much.
Yeah, true.
Not as nice as yours, though.
No.
Tell us about your gin.
Well, so last year we were down at Margaret River for the Gourmet Escape, and it's kind of lots of cooking and that kind of loads of chefs from all over. And we got to go to Limeburners, this distillery down there in Margaret River. And the guy who collaborates on our bar in dinner here in Melbourne, a guy called Tony Caligliario, we went to the distillery. And we tried to create a gin based upon all the botanicals and things that we noticed from in the car journey from Perth down to Margaret River, and try and incorporate those and the terroir into the gin itself. So we just set about making a gin and blending different flavors together with different levels of strength, and then refining it down. And then we combined our two gins to take the best bits.
Right.
And the worst bits out, obviously, and try and get towards this one. And we kind of settled on, if I could explain, it's out of 10 as a level of sort of power for balance. You know, we've got lemon myrtle, which we thought was really, really important. Very Australiana ingredient. Then a level of 4 out of 10 for sandalwood.
Yep.
4 out of 10 for baronia, which is your lovely flowering plant that grows everywhere down there. Very fragrant.
Yeah.
And then using Tasmanian mountain pepper for a little bit on the finish, like 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
And this is all based on a grape-based spirit.
Right.
So it's very, very smooth and very, very sort of silky and creamy on the finish. And
it is. It's beautiful. I just had a taste of it.
It is incredibly delicious.
And for our listeners who don't know how gin's actually made, it's distilled, but it's very similar to making tea, isn't it? It's steeped in a way.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways of making it. One, you put the gin, you distill the gin through the aromats, and obviously distill it, and you extract those flavors. That is quite a skill, and obviously the ingredients that you put in are very sort of volatile, and they're quite different. So consistency for people that produce gin on any sort of scale is quite tricky.
Yeah.
There's another way, which is sort of cold compound blending,
right,
where you're taking the essential oils, which are natural ingredients, and then it's a much more controlled way. So technically, if we follow the recipe, we could make
the exact same flavor.
Exactly, and that will change a lot less and vary. So.
Why do you think that gin's become just, you know, such a fantastic drink in Australia? The white spirits have just taken over.
Yeah, well, I think the great thing here is the sun. You know, when you're standing in the sun, and like when we had this for the first time down in Margaret River, we're standing on the beach, it's the opening party, big glass, loads of ice, slice of lemon, simple tonic, nothing else in there. It's just, it's like being in Spain, you know.
But it's refreshing too for
some
reason.
It's refreshing, but it's, I don't know, you can't describe it.
Yeah.
It's just got that thing that you just want to drink.
I know, it's made vodka seems so 1990s.
Totally,
so passé.
absolutely.
But with like British India, you know, the gin and tonic, the tonic had quinine, is that correct, to keep the mosquitoes away?
That's what
put in there? And that has a flavour base as well, which they're still put in Indian tonic today, which is quite interesting.
I think the amazing thing is that there's so many, they all taste so different, and it's so subjective to what you like, and there is no right or wrong,
right?
You know, you can put what you want in it, they're all finished differently, people prefer different tonics, and you know, then you get into the backstory about where they came from, who started it.
Well, there's been a tonic revolution as well. I mean, that's the crazy thing. And it's
fascinating, though.
It can be pricey, but it's kind of a fun experimentation.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like with what you do, too. You do a lot of research, obviously, with the cuisine and the ingredients and all that. And that just brings more into the backstory of the product and obviously what you've created for the Margaret River.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people really like, is a story with it. It's not just a drink you're drinking.
Mm. Exactly. You know, there's multi layers to learn and to interact with, engage with, really.
Yeah.
And look, Margaret River is so stunning. I mean, who wouldn't want to be, you know, in the back of their house in Richmond, which is what I'll be doing this afternoon, you know, in the in my little courtyard there, and I'll be sipping on a bit of Margaret River, and then all of a sudden I'll go out to the, you know, I'll be looking at the beach, the white sands of Margaret River, and I'll be thinking, WA, you're just beautiful, all because of this gin.
Yeah, it's an escape.
Wow, the power of suggestion on you, Russ, is just really working overtime.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
New to Joy Podcast, Sydney Mardi Gras turns 40 next year, and it certainly isn't over the hill yet. We look at what's changed, what's stayed the same, and chat to director Greg Clark on all things Mardi Gras over on The Informer. Point your ears toward Taiwan. We talk about the biggest pride event in Asia on Worldwide Wave. It's all fun and games on Checkpoint, who are back again to talk about their highlights from the biggest video game expo in the country, PAX Australia. And over on the Cabaret Room podcast feed, the team reflect on the premiere of Brigadoon and speak to the legendary Nancy Hayes, Elise McCann, and Rowan Brown on the night. Find your favorite Joy podcast new at joy.org.au or on iTunes. Joy podcasts where you want them, when you want them.
Don't you just love those podcasts?
Great.
I'm always listening to you guys on the Escape Hour every week.
On the Escape Hour every week.
Well, that's right. While I was away, I thought, God, you know.
Did you really?
I did. I thought, you know, I'm sitting in an airport. I really need to check in and see what Fiona's up to and how she's improved the show without Ted and I on. And Mike, can I just say, you are bloody brilliant.
So much so that we're leaving more often.
Well, I kind of just, I expected to get the tap on the shoulder when I got back. But you did a great job, Fiona. Thank you so much for stepping in.
You know, when you're thrown in the deep end and you have to ask all the questions.
Yeah.
No. I had some fun people in too. Some really fun people.
That's good.
Speaking of which, we've discovered gin, haven't we?
Rediscovered. Yeah, absolutely. It's all happening.
Sorry, my sock's a bit smelly.
Yeah, why is that?
I have no idea.
You should explain.
I think the sock smells quite nice.
Do you?
It's very like eucalyptus or something.
It's beautiful, isn't it? We've just had our socks changed in the studio. And I'm feeling quite...
I don't know.
Invigorated
with these new socks.
That's a microphone sock.
That's right.
Just in case anyone
knows.
It's not a cock sock, is it?
No, it's not a cock sock. No, anyway, back to our guests. I do apologise for that interruption.
So this beautiful gin is going to be available at the Margaret River Gourmet Escape, which is next weekend.
Next weekend. And we also, the only other place that we serve it is obviously in our bar here in Melbourne. So, you know, if it sounds great to you, then you can just pop by and have a drink.
And that's the great thing with Dinner by Heston. You don't have to have dinner. You can just have a cocktail.
We've got a lovely small bar, lovely kind of little atmosphere, a little bit of music. And, you know, you can sit there and chat away and get the layers of
the martini that I had at Dinner by Heston at the beginning before I sat at my table was just heavenly. And the beautiful glass where it was served in.
Yeah, it's so elegant, that little thing.
So gorgeous.
Elegant, yet sort of... It will creep up on you, that one, I think.
I think it could only be quite dangerous.
Yeah. But it's we distill the olive leaves in the actual liquid.
Oh.
And so it's an olive leaf martini. So I don't like them when they're terribly out of balance and really, really harsh. But this one is really smooth, and it's in the smallest little dainty coupe, which is a skillful... If you can drink that without spilling it, you're doing very well.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful glass to behold.
Yes.
Now, what happens when you fly in from the UK? Do all of the staff do a bit of a Gordon Ramsay and absolutely go amazingly nervous and they stand there thinking, quick, let's clean everything and make it look gorgeous? And
No, I mean, you know, they're...
Or do you come in and do one of those surprise things where you're a customer and they...
No, they do you know what? We're just integrating as part of it. And
they're
doing such a great job anyway. It's just... Yeah. It's more just getting involved and sort of talking to people and, you know, bringing what we've been working on from the UK in and sort of... localising that with the ingredients of Australia, really.
Nice.
And you know, that takes a bit of doing. And it's completely the opposite season. Like, you know, right? You've just come back from Europe.
Yeah.
We're going into winter, really cold and misty and frosty. And here, 28 degrees, beautiful weather.
Fantastic.
That's good, isn't it?
It is about time.
Is it difficult, from your point of view, to learn about the new ingredients that we have in Australia and try to integrate them into your recipes that you might already have or to develop new ones? Is that something that's kind of hard to get in tune with initially, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, we have some great friends that run restaurants here, and, you know, they've been a great help to us. You know, Neil Perry, Shannon Bennett, Peter Gilmore from Key, Andrew McConnell from here. And it was... We were very much... accepted in, and anything that we needed, if you're looking for anything, just let us know, and we'll put you in touch with this guy and that guy, you know, incredible fishermen and things like that. But it's such a big country.
Yeah,
it is like looking for a needle in a haystack when you first get here and go, oh, right, it really is that far away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you don't realize it until you actually have to make the trip, how actually you're on the other, in the other side of the world, basically.
Yeah, and you know, we can jump in the car in England and get from one end to the other in a day, no problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, you have to wrap your head around a completely different approach. Yeah. But, you know, the produce here is absolutely stunning. And, you know, we've just got to try and grow those relationships with farmers and growers and fishermen and hunters and bring it to the restaurant. Yeah.
And you find that, you know, most people that come to Dinner by Heston, they're after newness, they're after experimentation, there's a level of expectation. It must be a hard thing to keep it up.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's contemporary restaurant. It's all based on historical dishes, historical starting points. Mm. We then absorb that. It's a bit like singer-songwriters in a way. You absorb life experiences, think about it, you put that with a melody, and then you give birth to a song, you know, and a new piece of music. So it's very similar to that. There's no real set way of doing it, apart from the starting point and obviously the finishing point.
Yep.
And then telling that story in the menu sufficiently and giving a little history, it's a beautiful item. And, for example, like the meat fruit, which has been massively successful and probably Instagrammed a billion times, that's not leaving the menu, obviously.
No, it's not. And that's the thing, like, even when we opened the restaurant in London, after about a year, you know, you'd have people coming in and they would lift the meat fruit up in front of their face to have their picture taken with it. Yeah. Like, it's become something that it's not just food. It's not a person, obviously. But it's this thing of, you know,
an icon.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I've made it.
Yeah.
I'm eating the meat fruit.
We've got going on in December here with a bit more festive kind of things in mind. We make a spiced plum. So it looks just like a plum. It's made from spiced red wine, a little bit of plum puree as well. So it's that really Christmassy, festive-y thing.
Do you get, like when you've come to Australia, you've sort of incorporated a lot of Australian history and ingredients into the food. Does any of that ever get brought back to the UK as far as people wanting to try those things that haven't been able to come out here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's more probably, we've brought pumpkin back. You know, we use a lot more pumpkin now in London. Two desserts that have been especially popular back in the UK. Right. And like, we get to Australia Day and we think, do you know what? We're just going to do it. You know, we're going to put the Lamington cake on, which is like this really sort of technical, layered, molten centre gâteau almost of fine sort of pastry work. Yep. So we put that on in London. And then we also did a version of or a dish based on cherry ripe from here in Melbourne.
Yeah. Okay.
Which has got an amazing story.
Right.
And it was invented by the Mac Robinson family here in Melbourne. And we then found out that the name Cherry Ripe Bar came from a piece of poetry written in 1570.
Really?
By an English chap. Who was a priest, and he was kind of like this renegade guy who then got he was thought of very badly by the establishment, and about 70 years later a composer wrote a piece of music to go with it, and it talks about the Cherry Isle and about the cherry, and that is where the name for the Cherry Ripe Bar came from. So it's amazing linkage, you know.
Definitely.
We love stuff like that.
Yeah, it's great.
They're great stories. No one ever thinks about no one ever spends enough time to think about the history of where these dishes came from. You might always marvel at how two things came together, but you're very rarely going to, you know, do the research and find out the true story.
Yeah.
Especially when you only have Wikipedia at your fingertips and you can't rely on that.
That's right, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit lawless.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we have a lot of people that listen to our show that love to travel, and we're always trying to give them really good ideas about what to do when they're traveling. In the UK right now, what do you think is some of the most exciting things that people should be checking out? Well, let's start from a food perspective.
Well, I think, I mean, there's great restaurants in London. Obviously, we have some outside of London as well. They're all over the country. And, I mean, there are pockets all over the country that, given that it is so small, they vary so much depending on where they are in the country. You know, there's some brilliant chefs doing brilliant things. Yeah. And really cooking personal food, and they're showing their personality through their food.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And it's just, I think people tend to, as time goes on, obviously their palates get better developed and, yeah. and demand a bit more from restaurants, which is great because it keeps you guys on your toes and
yeah.
having to, you know, reinvent new things and and improve on old things as well. I think it's quite
good. And the thing is, it's an ever-evolving industry.
Yeah,
you know, restaurants never stand still, and what people are after is always changing, and it's more about that whole experience, how the service is, the multi-layered kind of information behind something, the story of how something came to your plate, and what people actually do and get up to as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's and again, it makes the whole food experience when you're going to a restaurant and having a meal just so much more enhanced. It's really it makes it an experience that you remember.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if people come to your restaurant kind of rubbing their hands together and just like, I'm here for a great time.
Yeah.
I want to have a great night. And it's that's the perfect approach. If you've got this kind of dissecting, I'm going to come in and I'm going to dissect absolutely everything. You're actually kind of forgetting to have dinner and what it's all about, you know?
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, you get a lot of people that watch the Food Network or something and think that they're chefs and, you know, they don't really...
Yeah, I mean, it's each to their own, but...
oh, yeah, definitely. You know, but yeah, it's just it's fascinating, like you say. If you know, you have to go to a restaurant for the right reasons, I think, to really get the most out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you're a young chef as well, you go to a restaurant and you're trying to find things that are wrong, and, you know, and then you're like, what am I doing?
Right.
This is, you know, and as you get older, you're just like, it might not be my taste,
right?
But technically, there's nothing wrong here.
Right. It works. Yeah.
But we're here to have dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, chat, and it's the social thing, and the whole thing.
Yeah, and you're not always going to like everything.
No.
You know, it's just...
And
it's
taste is completely subjective.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know?
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, you know, when you're tasting things, like I've got a background in chocolate as well, and each person will taste chocolate differently. I might taste something on it, my palate, but your palate is different than mine, and probably a lot more well-honed than mine is, but, you know, you would be able to detect a lot more and different things than what I would. So it doesn't mean I'm wrong. It doesn't mean you're right or wrong either. It's just something that's individual.
Yeah, and, you know, if we use a certain chocolate for a certain dessert, given certain characteristics of that chocolate, it, you know, people don't have to really understand it. At the end of the day, does it taste nice, and do I love to eat this thing?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's all part of the process, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, people can delve into the stories. I mean, I think that makes it exciting, but not everyone likes to hear every detail of every dish.
No.
So,
and that's absolutely fine as well, you know. Some people just want to come in, have great food, great service, be really comfortable, have a great time, great experience, catch up with their friends, talk to their partners.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny though. I know a few people that come to the higher profile restaurants, and you know, they'll make a booking and know nothing about it. And I just think, you know nothing about it. Like, you know, like, what is that? Like, what's the point of making that booking and spending hard earned money for that? When, I don't know, do a bit of research. I think it just enhances
things.
I guess
to a certain extent, some people like ticking things off.
That's fine. But, you know, it's not a very
personal experience. No,
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
I'm going to get out of my chair because we've got another guest in here who's going to join the panel. And we've got more UK to talk about, travel, food. Very exciting.
And another liquid.
Another liquid. Okay. All right. Let's do. Are you going to do the intro for our?
Well, Tom has an unusual brown. I know that we've been drinking a lovely clear liquid called gin. Tom has been. You should probably just swing it around, maybe. And Tom has brought in a brown, an unusual brown liquid, which
we'll call it a broth.
Tom, call it. It's called a broth.
Yeah.
tell us more about it.
So this is a mushroom consommé, which we finished with sherry. Mm. So the historical link for the UK is a sherry scallop dish. Over here, we struggle to get scallops. So we incorporate it into the menu with marin. Mm-hmm. So it's a sherry marin dish. And we've just come over with we've come up with quite a big agenda in a short period of time to get new dishes on the menu for the hot side and for pastry. So we've got about a year's worth of food development work, and these are dishes that are mainly all on the menu in London. And obviously, again, as we touched on earlier with the seasons, we're kind of either 6 months behind or 6 months ahead, whichever way you want to look at it. So these are dishes that are actually live in the UK, and we're incorporating them onto the menu in Melbourne. So we're working a lot with the senior chefs, sending the recipes over. So obviously we're 12,500 miles away. We FaceTime chat quite regularly. We have been going through all the recipes, all the dishes, all the front of house training for, as you said earlier on, some people are interested in wanting to know about the food history, other people aren't, and the front of house kind of gauge that when they're in the restaurant with the guests. So we've been kind of going through everything, making sure everything was ready to go. So when we landed, we literally got in 7 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. And we went back to the hotel, to the Crown, checked into our rooms and had a shower, and then went straight to the restaurant and went into a full tasting with 14 dishes, which was it's quite a lot to taste, isn't it?
Probably a good thing for your jet lag. Just come to a restaurant, get stuck into tasting straight away, and just go hard all day.
So this is something we've worked on in the UK and obviously brought over. It's very high in umami, and obviously you've got the fresh sherry in there, which just gives it balances the broth in.
So this will be poured at the table. There's like a river prawn and seaweed tartare with yuzu, and then this grilled marin on top. Loads of different sea vegetables that we can get, and then this is poured literally at the table. But it's lots of umami. It's quite
lovely,
fragrant and perfumed, and
a nice depth of flavour to
there's
it.
There's quite an impact.
Yeah.
You know, when you pour this into the bowl, the kind of volatile sherry flavours that just come up, and it's, you know, it really is quite sensory.
It's amazing.
In many ways.
It reminds me certainly of some of the broths you have in Japan, where I was recently. Yeah. Beautiful.
So how long does that something like that take to develop? Do you get at that point?
Well, really I would say just the broth element of this, probably about 6-8 weeks.
2 months,
You know, we're making multiple ways of doing it, and you know, if we change this or we increase that or we cook it this way instead of that way, I mean, you know when it's right, and it's got to be like what we believe is the best that we can do.
So when you're doing that, do you have like quite a scientific process for achieving that, or is it just sort of you write a note down here that was good or not, or you know?
We have our knowledge as chefs, you know, is obviously quite technique based, obviously. But at the end of the day, we sometimes when we're doing stuff, we score it blind out of 10,
right?
You know, and because there's more than one of us doing it, then we kind of see and we discuss, and then we kind of try and work out, oh, let's try this, let's try that, and we literally don't we just try it.
Yeah.
If you don't try, you're never going to know. So just even if it doesn't work, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So what types of mushrooms do you use in this broth?
So we've got in this we've got shiitake. So we've just kind of discovered a new way of working with shiitake and how to get the best out of it, and baby button mushrooms. So we really roast them, caramelise them, get a really good colour and flavour on them, and then there's alcohol, there's some shallots and different herbs and aromatics. And then we also dry shiitakes as well. I think from a kilo of shiitakes, if you put them in the dehydrator, it goes down to about 200 grams. So you're losing 800 grams of liquid to intensify the flavour. Yeah. So we get different notes of shiitake. So we put raw shiitake in, we put seared shiitake, smoked shiitake, and then dried shiitake. So you're getting all the different layers of what a shiitake can offer, and it all kind of comes out in the final broth.
There is a person who there's a guy who grows shiitake down in the Otways. Do you get it locally, or do you bring it in?
We order it through one of our suppliers, but it'd be good to get his number and we can get some and have a sample.
Yeah, there's a guy who's done this. He grows shiitakes in like old logs.
I can get it for you.
Oh, really?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about him. Yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Him or her? We're not sure. But anyway, the person who grows the shiitakes.
Yep.
Amazing.
And the kind of sherry that you use.
Yeah, so this is we use a very volatile one, just for a little bit of sort of that edge, that slight harshness. And then we use one called Old East India, which is an Oloroso sherry, sort of medium to sweet. And that really gives you that I don't know how to describe it. It's just like, it's just lovely.
Just quite sweet and round, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very balanced. Yeah. And
the volatile one, to drink it on its own, isn't actually particularly pleasant. And we tasted it and we didn't think it was going to go anywhere. We added it into the broth and it's kind of rawness and it's almost shiitake, almost sake. It's kind of notes and flavours, which work really well with the mushrooms and the umami. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yep, really it's well. Absolutely delicious. And served with marin.
Yes.
Have you ever thought about taking marin over to the restaurant in Bray?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we can't get them there. We have lobsters and langoustines, prawns, amazing seafood. But, nothing quite like a marin. I suppose a crayfish is our closest thing, but they're so small.
Yeah, there's not much meat on
there's
them.
Not enough time in life to peel those.
Yeah, that's right.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is the escape hour. We've been escaping to the UK via Dinner by Heston, which is, of course, just up the street.
That's right.
So you don't have to go all that way. And we've been tasting this incredible broth, which was really, really beautiful. So we're nearly at the end of the show.
No, it's gone quick.
It has really gone quick. I know that you guys have got jet lag, but we can think about where we might want to go next time we get on a plane and we go to the UK. Any tips?
Well, I would say it would be wrong not to say come out to Bray.
Of course.
You know, we've got a 500-year-old coaching inn that's called the Hind's Head. That we've got this incredible, whimsical bar with really antique furniture. Yeah. We've turned it into like a historic hunting lodge with lots of different little things and surprises around, which is really
cool.
Obviously, we've got the Fat Duck and we've got Dinner by Heston in London, Fat Duck's in Bray. And then, I mean, there's some great restaurants in London. I think one of the most exciting ones that's opened this year is called Bibendum. A chef called Claude Bossy has reopened. He's teamed up with Sir Terence Conran, who owns the Michelin building. And it's got all Michelin men on it. It's where they used to make the tyres, the old factory.
Right.
Iconic London building.
Yeah.
Mm. And Claude has transported his kind of two Michelin star restaurant from Mayfair into Bibendum. Right. And it's one of the most magical rooms you'll ever see. Stained glass windows with the Michelin man with trainers on. And but it's iconic. It's absolutely superb. So that's a good one.
That sounds amazing. We have a restaurant here, a new restaurant called Mayfair, as a matter of fact.
Right. Okay.
Just opened recently where the old Pier Modern was.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah. So maybe, I mean, do you ever have time to eat in Melbourne when you're here?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I can't remember the name of the place we're going to try tonight, but it's a new Vietnamese restaurant that's just opened.
Oh, do you know what it's called? Yes. I think it starts with A. Or maybe that's just... I was reading about it today because Eater.com had done a list of 10 best restaurants in Melbourne at the moment, and that one was on it.
Right. Okay.
And it starts with A, and not doing very well there.
Yeah, we're not doing a good advertising. <That's all right.
laughs> But I'd be very keen to find out how it goes.
All right.
Well, enjoy your travels to Margaret River. What a beautiful place.
Thank you very much.
The weather is stunning for you. It will be gorgeous. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in today and for bringing all our samples on. It was incredible.
No problem.
Thanks for having us. And thanks for the gin and tonic.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.